All right, so Jody reached out, and so I thought, okay, I've got one class. It's hard to do, you know, one class. But what I actually thought is, you know, when I was teaching last quarter, I didn't get through all my material either. So just like Jody's struggling to get through his material, I didn't get through all of mine. And if you remember, we were talking about self-care in different aspects of self-care. We talked about relationships. So how are you doing on that? All right, we talked about relationships, how important it is to have relationships, and particularly with people in the church, and to build those, that we're not meant to be off on an island by ourselves. So relational health. We talked about physical health and how it's important to take care of yourself physically, and that God has given us this body. Again, this body isn't who we are, right? But he's given us this body, and to have this body, it's a resource to do his work. And so how are we doing as far as taking care of our body? So physical health. We talked about financial health. And just like our body, and we manage our body so that we can use it the best of the glory of God, also we do the same with our finances, right? And that he expects us to make sure that we take care of our finances in a way that, you know, he would approve, regardless of what those are. You know, you look at the parable of the talents, and whether you have your one talent, 10 talent, whatever it might be, he expects us to manage those things. And then we talked about mental health, something that we don't talk about that much in the church, right, is mental health. And we got a good little ways through that, but we didn't finish it. So I'm looking to try to just finish that today and have a discussion around mental health. When you think about self-care, again, from a mental perspective, and I know we covered a little bit of this, but it's been almost 3 months. So when you think about mental health and taking care of yourself mentally, what comes to mind? How do you take care of yourself mentally?
You give yourself time to think and meditate and just to regroup sometimes.
Okay, so give yourself time to regroup and to maybe meditate, think on things, recenter. What else?
Call a friend.
Okay, so it gets back to the relationships piece. So we talked about how they're all connected. So to have good mental health, it's good to have relationships. Okay, what else?
Coping mechanisms
for what?
Stress.
Okay, so we get stress, don't we? I mean, stress
could be good or bad.
Stress could be good or bad, right? Most of us deal with positive stress better. But stress is stress. We can have a lot of good things going on in our lives as we're moving. It's stressful, I can tell you, but it's a good thing, okay? And where does stress occur?
Everywhere.
Yeah, and what do you mean that by that?
I mean, all parts of every part of life. And it can be your body, but your mind, your body, physically.
Yeah, so I mean, stress, it's all, yeah, to your body, it's connected. I mean, we can be stressed in many various ways. Sometimes when you think about mental health, you can also think about self-control. Right? If you have self-control or you don't have self-control, where does that start? It's in your mind, right? It's in your head. It's how you think about things. And being able to control stealth starts with what's going on here. And some of us do better than that than others. And I'm actually going to spend, because where we ended, and we didn't get time, is we were talking about addiction. So we don't talk about addiction enough in the church, in my mind. And we don't think deeply enough about addiction. But before we get to that, another challenge, right, about maybe self-care or what does self-care look like? is, what about self-confidence? How does that play into mental health?
Your mind's got to be able to let you know that you're confident to do something. So that's back into your mind.
Okay.
And your heart too.
Is self-confidence an issue? Why is self-confidence an issue? I mean, what does it matter if you're confident or not confident in yourself?
Self-confidence helps you in every part of your life. If you, especially when something happens that is unexpected, if in that particular time you have some self-confidence, normally you'll still be able to handle it. And it could be something simple, or it could be, you know, something that's going to take time and effort, and but if you try to be confident in yourself and help others be confident in themselves, then normally you can try to handle it, and it works. It doesn't work all the time,
mm-hmm.
It works most of the time.
Okay. Is self-image hand-in-hand with self-confidence? That was a question. What do you all think?
It plays into it considerably. And I think that is something that we, not to go off on tangent, but like we discussed before, not think, you know, how you present yourself and how you carry yourself, and that confidence plays in, like you say, in every role of your life. If we're not confident in ourselves and our daily living, how are we going to share the word of God with other people? And then what we went back to, the health playing into that, and your self-image of how you yourself, see yourself, present yourself. Again, going back to our bodies being the temple of God and taking care of them and all of that, like we're committed to, I think we forget about that sometimes. And that can go down that rabbit hole of playing into your confidence in yourself or not. But also, is your interactions with people, and are we welcoming other people to interact with us to build our confidence, but to share the word of God with them?
Okay. So, yeah, Si.
Self-confidence. I'm a fireman, and I know this because I know a bunch of firemen. And we as firemen ride a very fine line of self-confidence and arrogance. And it goes back to what we do, and you know, that kind of thing. But it's something with self-confidence can sometimes lead to arrogance if you don't manage yourself in that.
Yeah, self-confidence can lead to arrogance. So think about going into war. Let's say you're going to go into a battle. Do you think the outcome is partially determinate if you're, you know, if you're trained?
Sure.
Or if you're confident in your training? Right? Like, so think about just when a stressful event comes up in your life. If you have no self-confidence that you can handle this event, your stress goes off the charts, right? Because, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And I don't... Others could have that same event come into their life, and they're like, I know a path, right? I know how to do this. To Si's point, though, what comes up a lot is that I know how to do this. I'm ready to do this, right? And then at some point, pride can come in, and you become overconfident. And we know where pride leads us, right? What's the scriptures tell us? Right? Pride cometh before a fall. And so we need to be careful and realize that as Christians, I actually feel good that I don't have to be so amazing. Why? Why don't you have to be so amazing as a Christian? Because God's amazing. Right? And the things that matter, God will. And you have to have faith that God will. So it's brutal to have good mental health in the world. I don't know how people do it without God, because they have to be everything. I've got to know it all. I have to be it all. I have to be smart enough. I have to... But if you really believe in the providence of God, if you believe in prayer, do you just pray or do you believe in prayer? If you believe in prayer, I don't have to figure it all out. God will do what's best for me.
That
says
that in our weakness, he can show his strength.
That's right. Paul talks about that. And we, 2 Corinthians 12:7, right, in there is where that passage is. So there's a lot of things, and I want to make sure I actually get to the part that I didn't get to last time. I'll end up doing the whole lesson over again. So, but a few things, right? Knowing that you're good enough, the self-esteem, self-confidence, you are good enough. How do you know that you have value?
Because God says
we are God.
He died for us. We have to be.
He died for us.
There's more valuable than anything. He gave his life for us. That makes us the most valuable thing he has.
If we weren't valuable, the devil wouldn't be chasing us so hard.
Okay.
We're made in his image.
We're made in his image. Genesis 1:26. I mean, you're made in the image of God. You're not just like a different type of antelope, right? Or a different looking giraffe. I mean, you're made in the image of God. And how are you made in the image of God? Does he have 10 fingers and 10 toes and
soul?
Your soul, right? God is spirit. And that's what separates us. I mean, we're special. That's why even people who are mean and nasty out there, we have to understand that that's God's child. Humans are different. They're all valuable. All those souls are valuable. Some of them are nasty. Some of them are mean. Some of them aren't nice. Some of them, but they're valuable. We need to understand, and I think we do, that all people are valuable because they're made in the image of God. That's different than the squirrel that shoots across the, right? And so, which means you're valuable. You are made in the image of God. You're redeemable. So when we think about self-confidence, you know, and it's easy in this world, and I've talked about it before, you know, I don't look this way, I'm not tall enough, I'm not short enough, my hair's curly, it's straight, it's too thin, it's, you know, my lips aren't thick enough, my, you know, whatever it might be, my nose is too big, my forehead's too big, you know, whatever it is, it's just a body. Right? It's a body. And I know we get a little obsessed with our body, but it's a body. Okay, I'm going to move to addiction because that's where I really want to spend some of our time because we almost never talk about that. So when you think about anxiety and stress, what did the Lord tell us about stress? Be anxious for nothing, he tells us. To be anxious for nothing, all right? And that's Matthew 6, 24, and following 24 through 34. And in there, he talks about, and I'm not going back over it, I'm just giving you the, because we covered it. But he talks about not to worry, and that if you're a worrier, he says in there, basically, because you're relying on self is the implication. He tells you not to worry. Why shouldn't you worry? Because the Father knows what? He knows what you need. Do you not think that the Father doesn't know what you need? He says, even the hairs on your head are numbered. You don't think he doesn't understand what your problems are? Like, why are you worrying? Do you not think he's going to take care of you? O ye of little faith? So when we worry and we flip out about stuff, what are we telling God?
We don't trust him.
I don't trust you. I don't believe in you. How do you think Paul and Silas, what were they doing in prison?
Praying,
staying close to God.
And singing.
And singing. Who sings in prison after what had just happened to them? They just got the tar beat out of them. Who does that? Did anybody notice?
Sure.
prisoners.
The prisoners noticed. Why would they take notice of that? That's unusual. Who in the world sings in prison after they've been beaten? That's different. They have a different source of self-confidence. Were they confident in themselves about what was going to happen? No. But they were confident that God, and did God? He broke them out of there. And then they didn't even run. It's like, this is our chance. God answered our prayers. Here we go. We can leave. Did they? Told the jailer, hey, we're all here. We're all here. Like, I don't have to flee this. God's in control. When we stress out, we're sending a message to God. I think this one's a little bigger than you. Not so sure that you can do this one, God. Like, I've messed this one up pretty big. Okay? Now, when people are stressed, when people are anxious, what do they do? Okay. Could be drugs, alcohol, all kinds of different things. But what is that doing? What are they doing? They're trying to medicate somehow, right? They're trying to escape.
They're fixing it
themselves. Right? They're fixing it themselves with something else.
They're not.
Okay. They're looking for a way to feel better.
Self-soothing.
Okay. So we and there's all kinds of reasons. People do it. How you got there and what got you to that moment, there's 100 million different ways this world can abuse you and get you to a place where you want to make yourself feel better. I mean, they're countless. But at the end of the day, we all are in a place where we want to feel better for some reason. Now, just because you want to feel better doesn't make you an addict. Okay, because it's normal that we're in this life, we're going to have a hard time, and something's going to come our way. And we don't enjoy being, in pain. However, there might be more of us that are addicts than we realize. And there might be more of us who struggle with addiction than we realize, and I want to talk about that. This morning. Now, the reason this is important to me to talk about is because there are people who are in the church and people who come into the church. Addiction is everywhere in the world. And in the church, I don't know that we know how to talk about it. I don't know if we know how to deal with someone who's struggling with an addiction. And therefore, we don't hear that much about people struggling with addiction, and we don't see that many in the church. See, doesn't mean it's not there. And it's because no one talks about it.
Addicts in a church will generally go to an AA meeting before they go to their brethren.
Yeah, I mean, people will, they'll seek people outside of the church for help versus people in the church for help because we don't know how to help. And we don't know how to think about it. What's the difference between someone who's in addiction versus someone who does the same thing, but it's not an addiction? They can't stop. No reasoning behind doing it. How do you really know it's an addiction? How many happy addicts do you see? And why aren't they happy?
They're chasing that.
They're looking at that next.
They are. They're always looking for something else. But what? Ultimately, all addictions lead where? Well, ultimately, yes, you're right. That's really ultimately. Ultimately, on this earth, all addictions kind of lead.
Eventually, you end up in a dark hole. Eventually, you have to.
It's self-destruction.
Yes, it is.
So I'll never forget that my. I don't remember what, Sandy was probably in my class. I don't know if it was high school or college or what, but I was in one psychology class. I think it was high school. And the teacher was talking about a guy who every morning he had to go out. He lived on a kind of a road like this. You know, not like a highway, but a road like this. And he had to go out every morning and he had to lay in the road north and south, and then he had to lay in the road east and west. Had to. Okay? It was like a calming thing. Okay, again, it's a self-soothing thing. Addictions come in all kinds of forms. Okay? And he got run over one day, broke his legs. It's what happens when you lay out in the road. Okay? Like there wasn't a person there with a stop slow thing, so this guy could go do that, right? Addicts do things that don't make sense. When you see somebody self-destructing, doing things that harm their body, doing things that tear up their families, it's likely there's an addiction there. That's not normal human behavior, to tear yourself apart and to tear things apart that are around you. And what do we often think about with addicts? We think, well, they just need to stop. Just quit, right? There's judgment that comes pretty quick. Just stop doing that. Don't pick up the bottle. Just don't drink. How hard is that? Okay. Don't pick up the cigarette.
The video game.
So we're going to get to, all right? Don't pick up the piece of pizza. Okay? I don't want to hear that you're overweight and all that stuff. Just stop eating. Do you not know how that happens? Do you not know how, when you get drunk, how that happens? Do you not know how, you know, when you get high, how that happens? Just stop it. Have a little self-control. There's stuff going on here. Okay? There's stuff going on here. And we need to be 10-20% more empathetic. I am not advocating or endorsing or saying a lot of those things are okay. But let's talk about, just for a minute, the cycle, okay? So there's a trigger. There's a trigger that happens. You want to know some interesting triggers? Well, let me do this first. There's a trigger that happens. And once people are triggered, they crave. How many of you have ever seen a commercial? I love those Domino's commercials. Sandy, how many times? All right? I'll see this Pizza Hut and they're pulling that big piece of pizza and you see that cheese just hanging off of it and the pepperoni. And what do I say? I go, all of that looks good. I could go for a piece of pizza right now. Because that's what I need. I need another piece of pizza. Right? Marketers know how this works. Why in the world would they stick a 20 by 60 billboard on the side of a road in someone's yard? Why would they pay $20 million for 30 seconds on a Super Bowl to get in your head for 30 seconds? I'll tell you why. Because it works. People go off and they buy before you know it. And how hard is it? Right? You see a commercial for pizza? What happens? Or you're flipping through the home shopping network and they're like, hey, we've got these special hair barrettes that you really need. Look how cool these are. And they clip this way and they clip this way. Clip this way. All right, whatever it is. And you're like, I think I need one of those. Now, we crave. When you crave, you move to ritual. What do you think ritual is? Even just think of the pizza example. You see a pizza commercial. You crave the pizza. What's your ritual? What's that? You and so more than that, right? Yes, exactly. You order it, right? So when does the ritual start? So you're sitting there on your couch. When does your ritual start? You start acting. If you don't have your cell phone right beside you, what do? You stand up. The ritual's kicking off. Or you're thinking, oh, I don't want this. I can't eat anymore. I've got a whatever. And then you see the golden arches while you're driving. And you're like, man, or Wendy's, wouldn't a Frosty be great right now? I love a good Frosty. Okay? When's the ritual start? When you start turning over the sling. Okay? Just because you get a Frosty doesn't mean you're an addict. But we get addicted to what? Food. More specifically, sugar. Caffeine. Right? All of those things. Because it feels good. It tastes good. It's good stuff. Right? For an addict, once you start in ritual, these poor people, when you say, just have more self-control, you think about pornography. You have an issue with pornography? You get triggered by something visual, something, someone, whatever it might be, something in a movie, and you start craving. The second you reach for that laptop or your phone or you click on a different site, you're in ritual. And for an addict, once they start, I'm just going to go to ritual, it takes an act of God for them not to go to action. They're going to get that joint. They're going to get that fix. Whatever that fix is, they're going to sit there. And then the person's going to say, and would you like to upsize that Frosty? Yes, please. I would. Okay. And then what happens? You feel bad about it. You're like, what in the world? I mean, I ate this thing in 27 seconds. I got Frosty in my eyebrows. Okay. I mean, I dove headfirst into this thing. Okay. I got a piece of pepperoni in my hair. And then I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I couldn't just wait? Seriously? What did I just do? How fast did I eat that thing? Am I starving? I'm not starving. And we feel bad about it. Shame is one of the biggest, what?
Triggers.
This is a hopeless cycle. It's horrible. And when you're really in it, it's hell. And as Christians, we need to be careful that we're just not like, you just need to stop. You don't have self-control. They do need to stop, especially if things are sinful. You need to stop. But you're not going to stop on your own, and you're not just going to stop because it's not you need more self-control. What do they need? They need God. You actually are trying to control it. That's your problem, is that you're trying to control it. You can't control it. You've proven that over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, that you actually can't control it. That's your problem. Now, you think about addictions. There are some that are illegal. There are some that are immoral. There are some that are just unhealthy. All right? So let's talk about some of the unhealthy ones for a minute. What are some of them that we've... I don't have enough room over here. Okay, sugar. I'll just put food. What else?
Alcohol.
What's that?
Alcohol.
Where would you put alcohol? Now, the world would put alcohol somewhere. You know, but you could argue, is it immoral? Is it unhealthy?
It's all good.
You know.
A workaholic?
It's sugar.
But it's another form of, okay, work. People get addicted to work, right? Do people use work as an escape?
Yes.
I feel good at work. You know, work's the only place I feel valued.
Social media.
Social media. Now, what do they like about social media?
The lies.
What's that?
The lies.
Okay, well, the lies. But what do people do?
Attention.
They want attention. How do they get that on social media?
Likes.
Likes
and followers.
Hey, I've even had people say, hey, could you like my thing because I'd like to get more likes? Can you go out and like that? Right? So, they get addicted to likes.
One that a lot.
How many clicks?
Exercise.
Okay, now, exercise.
I had a problem with that when I was in high school, where I would skip lunch and go to the gym instead of eating.
Do people get addicted to exercise? They do. It's an escape. They're in there all the time. It's like you don't actually need to be in the gym 7 hours a day. Every day, you have no life. You're escaping. Your relationships are so, you know, it's like, are you really going to the gym again? Yes, I am, because today I've got to bench 3,000 pounds. Okay? In case a car falls on you, I'm going to be ready. I'm doing it for you. Okay? Really?
Caretaker or fixer?
People who are caretakers. They're addicted, right? I'm caretaking for someone. Even good stuff can turn bad.
Well, that's why when you use the wording, especially if it's sinful, we're talking about that cycle. I'd argue when you're in that cycle, it's sinful, no matter what it is, because you've taken that attention.
Because you're out of control. See, here's the thing is, you are out of control. When you're not in control anymore, that's a scary place to be. It doesn't matter what it is. Okay? Think about what are some of the immoral addictions. These are immoral. Illegal ones can also be immoral. But when you think about immoral but not illegal.
Pornography.
Okay?
Marital affairs.
Okay? Porn affairs.
Drunkenness.
Okay?
Even,
now, is there porn that then starts to move over here?
Yes.
Okay, so you get child porn.
Affairs as well. Can be illegal.
Yeah.
Certainly.
And so one thing that happens is social media, I'm seeking attention. I need attention, I need attention, I need attention. It's masked in a different way. Things can move over to affairs because I need attention. I didn't get attention this way, but I'll get attention this way, right? Or, you know, porn, and porn could lead to child porn because it's more. An addiction never stops. It wants more. You can't feed it enough over time. Right? What about plastic surgery? I mean, is it immoral? You know, if you want your nose to look different, you want your... But are there people who are addicted to plastic surgery? What about tattoos?
Shopping.
How many pairs of shoes do you need? Right? You look at... Yeah, one more, right? One more pair.
Gaming.
You start to see, right, humans, they get off track pretty easily. All of these, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I had anger. Do people get addicted to anger?
Yeah.
We get addicted to feelings. You can get addicted to feelings. that you want to feel a particular way. Some people, they love being angry. They act like they don't, but they actually do. They get a buzz off of being angry. It's chemical.
Well, that and that too. And you're doing a great job of pointing out. I think part of the reason we don't talk about this in the church is because we think, and it was everybody's first answer here today, right? Like drugs and alcohol. When we think addiction, drugs and alcohol. Everything that we're discussing, it is the exact same portions of your brain that are triggered, that are working the knot, that are inflaming the knot, that's releasing, you know, dopamine and all these things that cause every bit of this. So I think a lot of times, just from what I've experienced, people get really judgy real quick, or justifying these others. Well, I have an overeating habit, but I'm not addicted to pot, or I don't snort cocaine.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah,
and when
right.
you can wrap your brain around that, that's where the empathy comes from that you're talking about that we need to have. And realizing that addiction has a hold of you no matter what it is. I've got guys in recovery right now that are in the same recovery program for everything I'm on that board.
Yeah.
Electronics is being treated exactly like the cocaine.
Look at Romans 6. Exactly. Right. Look at Romans 6. I did a whole nother Sunday and I still didn't get through this. But now I was going to get to all my passages. So Romans 6, 15. It says, what then? Shall we sin because we are not under law, but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave with whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of what?
Sin.
Yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from what?
Sin.
You became slaves of righteousness. Sin can encapsulate. It dominates. It can take over your life. And we actually become slaves of sin. We are actually designed, because we don't want to be slaves of sin, we want to be slaves of what did it say? Of righteousness. Of righteousness. We are designed to be sheep. I mean, God designed us to follow. But he gave us the intellect to choose. And even the scriptures tell us you're either going to be a slave to sin or you're going to be a slave to righteousness. There's not an in-between. You will allow yourself to be overtaken with righteousness, and you think about God and you focus on God and you walk with God, or you push him out and you do your own thing and you become a slave to sin. And you forget about God. And we're told that if we want to focus on sin and focus on the world, God gave them up, right? God gave them over, right, to a reprobate mind. He allowed them, that's your choice where you want to go. So, we know in John 8, 34, it says if you commit sin, that you are a slave of sin. Look in Romans 1. In Romans 1. In verse 24, it talks about how God gave them up to uncleanliness, right? To the lust of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves. And that comes in all different ways. And he goes on and talks about, in verse 28, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which were not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, whether it's sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness. He goes through all the different things, backbiters, inventors of evil things, on and on and on, unforgiving, unloving, unmerciful. But look at verse 32. Who, knowing what?
The righteous judgment of God.
knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, knowing that, what do they do?
They not only do it, but approve.
Not only do it, but they approve. How is this different than the guy laying out in the middle of the road and getting his legs run over? This is how powerful sin is. And addiction is part of that. Knowing, have you ever done, you talk to an addict, is they're like, hey, I think this stuff's fantastic for me. No, they get it. After the action and they're rational and they come back down, they're like, I'm killing myself. And then what do? They crave it again and they're right back out there. That's a sickness. There's a spiritual sickness that says they're involved in all of these things. You all, some of you are involved in these things, we're involved in these things, and knowing the righteous judgment of God, knowing he's going to judge you, knowing that this leads to death, not only do you do it, but you approve of others. Is that not sickness? Is that not self-destruction? But I don't want to end my class there. That's a little depressing. I don't want to trigger anybody. So let's move over to Romans 8, 31, because the bell's ready to ring. Romans 8, 31. What then shall we say to these things? What if God is for us, what? Who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him for us all. How shall he not with him also freely give us all things? Do you not believe that God will give you all the things you need? Who shall bring a charge against God's elect? It is God who justifies. Who is he who condemns? It is Christ who died, furthermore is also risen, who is even at the right hand of God, who also makes intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Addicts feel so empty. They're looking to fill themselves with something. Who's going to separate you from the love of God? Shall tribulation? Are you going to let tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for your sakes we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Through who? Through Christ. Through him. Not through your own strength. You're going to be more than a conqueror through Christ. For I am persuaded that neither life nor death nor angels nor principalities nor powers nor things present or things to come, height, depth, any other created thing, nothing shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. That's what we have to offer an addict. That's what we have to offer each other. Let's not get so distracted by the self-destruction behavior. And let's have some empathy. We don't condone this. Not condoning this. There's some bad, and there's consequences to this stuff. But let's understand where we are and how our behaviors often, we're not that far away. Okay? We just judge on this scale. Okay? Thanks.